Welcome back to Ed Show number 53. And here in the news, we have a pretty big announcement: Office 365 general availability. One of the first things I should point out, in case you're not familiar with Office 365, there's a lot of different components that are included in that. You've got Exchange, SharePoint Online, Link Online, and then you get a actual local physical copy of Office, either for PC or for Mac. And I thought that would be a cool thing, because there's so much stuff there and that we use it all the time, that you and I could just talk about some favorite features that we have.
Sure. I mean, one of yours is SkyDrive, right? You use SkyDrive all the time, but a lot of people still, they're not quite familiar what it is.
Yeah, they're not quite sure. Well, you know, a lot of people have heard of Dropbox, right? And, oh, hey, this whole cloud storage type thing. Well, you know, of course, a lot of people are familiar with SkyDrive, and that's our free, you know, kind of personal storage. You get 7 gigs of storage free. And but for companies, right, they're kind of like, well, oh, we don't want people storing stuff in their Dropbox or their SkyDrive because we don't have any control or visibility over that, right? Well, with SharePoint 2013, out of the box, you get a feature called SkyDrive Pro. Looks and behaves very similar to what you would have with your regular SkyDrive, but it does sync up to SharePoint. And therefore, your company is going to have the ability to, you know, have visibility, set, you know, controls or policies on that type of content. And at Microsoft, I use this all the time to collaborate with folks internally. Instead of having that email chain of having, you know, Office docs or PowerPoint decks or whatever flying all over the place, I've got it up in SharePoint, and then I also have a local copy on my physical drive, which is, you know, protected by BitLocker. So it's a really useful scenario. So if you're offline or online, you always have those documents available to you.
That's great. I enjoy using SkyDrive even for just the personal stuff too, because you get that shared information across multiple devices.
Yep.
So even things at home, like a shopping list, a grocery list, you know, I can look it up on my Windows phone, I can go see it on the internet, and I just have this shared information across all the different devices.
Mm-hmm.
So really nice utility there. But probably my favorite are the Office web apps. So this is basically a online browser-based version of Excel, PowerPoint, Word, all of the kind of basic Office tools. And nice thing about actually being able to store those web apps is you can use SkyDrive. So I can use SkyDrive as kind of my central repository. I can access and edit all of my information using these online apps, and then I can go sync it and see it across all my different devices. So what this means is I don't need to go download a full version of Office or Excel or PowerPoint to be able to just view the documents, edit them, make these types of changes. I can do all of that inside a web browser.
Yeah, and you know, I do have a previous Ed Show episode on that with the Program Manager, so if you want to learn more, you could definitely dig into that. Another element that I like a lot is Link. And so there's new enhancements to Link. But in general, I love the ability that I use all the time is one, just the integrated communication across Outlook, SharePoint, in documents for collaboration and co-authoring, right? It's like the contact's right there. So I'm editing a document, I can see somebody's editing it, contact them right away, and then go from an IM to a phone call to a video chat to, you know, record a meeting if I need to, right there all on the fly. So it's really handy. I honestly don't know what I would do if I didn't have that now in my regular day job.
Well, I've actually found one of these other server products, the Office version, Exchange Online, to be really useful in our own side businesses as well. So my father, he owns a small company, a shipping company, and they have their own on-premise Exchange server. It was running on Windows Server 2000, using Exchange 2003. Very slow, very expensive, because every time they had a problem with it, they'd have to call someone up, have them come on site, try to troubleshoot it, fix it. And in that time, they would lose emails, their spam filters would go down, so they would get flooded with junk message. And bottom line is, they were losing business because of it. So I said, hey, have you ever heard of this online product, Office Online, Exchange Online? Tell me about it. No, I mean, I've heard this cloud stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of talked about it, that, hey, basically, we are running your Exchange server, your mailbox, in the cloud. You get all of your email. It's patched, it's secure, it has the latest and greatest Exchange features, and you just pay $3 to $4 per user per month. So rather than spending, you know, $4,000 every time this person comes into your data center for just a day, hey, have everybody run it for you, host it in the cloud, and only pay for that user account. So we see that, you know, in the real world, really be of great benefit.
Yeah, there's way too much to talk about here, but definitely check out the virtual launch, the recap of the virtual launch event. And then there's also a garage series for IT pros. That'll give you some additional training on just IT ProFocus stuff. How do I deploy, let's say, the on-premise version of Office, and learning some additional things. There's the video series on that you might want to check out. Yeah, what else do we got in the news?
Well, moving away from kind of this, Office Online, we'll talk about our other online, Internet Explorer. So we just released Internet Explorer 10, which is now supported on Windows 7. So this means we have 700,000 new users who now have access to Internet Explorer 10. So why should you go and upgrade to IE10? Well, one of the biggest things is we support more standards in this release. All of the new enhancements, we have CSS 3.0, HTML5, new types of JavaScript. So we support all of the industry standards. In fact, 60% more new standards than our previous release in IE9. Additionally, it's faster. So you could go online, go to beautyoftheweb.com, go through some trials and actually experiment, you know, how much faster Internet Explorer 10 is. They say it's at least 20% faster and compared to our old version of Internet Explorer, and up to 40% faster than the latest version of some of these other competitive browsers that have just been released. So if you have Windows 7, go download IE10. Oh, I almost forgot to mention, it's touch capable as well. So if you have a touch-enabled device, still running Windows 7, you can still take advantage of all the touch capabilities with IE10.
And of course, if you've got Windows 8, you're covered because that already has IE10.
Oh, yeah.
But the one last news item that we have is Forefront UAG has released a Service Pack 3 that includes a lot of new capabilities. For those of you who are not familiar with Unified Access Gateway, it is a remote access publishing solution. So if you have anything behind your corporate firewall that you want to publish, it's really your one-stop shop to that. There's a lot of great wizards for publishing all kinds of things, you know, SharePoint, whatever other kind of websites you have to inside of your corporate organization. And with this update, we have a lot of new enhancements around supporting Windows 8, Windows RT, Windows Phone, SharePoint Exchange. A lot of new wizards make things easier for you.
Nice. So tell me, what is the interview for today?
Well, today we are going to be talking about Windows Azure Virtual Machines, or our infrastructure as a service offering. It's a pretty big deal for IT pros, being able to spin up virtual machines on the fly, on demand, all up there in the cloud. That can, of course, connect to your on-premise network.
Nice. Let's take a look at that.
All right. Here we are, and I am joined by Drew, and I wanted to talk to you about some Windows Azure stuff. I hear you know a few things about
Absolutely.
That.
A little bit about Windows Azure and our virtual machines.
Okay. And what do you do at Microsoft?
So I'm Drew McDaniel. I'm a program manager in the Windows Azure team, and I've been working on what we've been doing around our virtual machine, also known as infrastructure as a service.
Okay, and what areas around that do you own?
Yeah. So I've been working on a lot of our galleries. So with Windows Azure and the virtual machines, we actually bring a set of standard virtual machines up into Windows Azure. Allows IT pros to just come and start using these for dev test environments, for deploying SQL, deploying SharePoint, and also some Linux stuff.
Cool. Yeah. What other kinds of scenarios do you see folks using it for, like disaster recovery or other things like that?
Right. So we see people using it, as I said, like dev test environments. People use this for disaster recovery. The thing is, with coupling virtual machines with virtual networking, you're able to have a machine on premise and then actually connect to those also machines in Azure, so you can have disaster recovery. Your Azure site can actually be your DR site, so you can just bring up a machine there and then still connect to that by your machines on premise as if it was in a branch office, if you will.
Yeah, I know. One other thing too, it's a little bit of a shift in mindset of, you know, if you were an IT pro today and you have physical hardware machines that run however many VMs they run, and you tap out the capacity of that guy, that physical server, it's like, oh, well, now I've got to go spin up this cycle of buying new hardware and all these other things, whereas the other alternative, right, would be infrastructure as a service. You say, hey, I want to fire up a single VM, and here's the size I want it, and then extend that kind of virtual networking into the cloud, right?
Exactly. It just gives you, the Windows Azure gives you that on-demand capacity that you need. When you need it, pay for what you use and only what you use, spin it down when you're done with it.
Cool. Well, could we dig into the gallery images?
Absolutely.
And see kind of what's brewing there.
Okay. So what we're looking at here, this is the brand new Windows Azure portal. If you select in virtual machines, this is our infrastructure as a service offering. And as you go into, down here, the new, we're selecting compute and showing our virtual machines. There's a way to do a quick create that gives you just a little basic quick virtual machine, but a little more interesting as you look into the gallery. And so as you come into the gallery, you'll actually see a set of platform images, which we've already uploaded into Windows Azure. This allows you to get up and running very quickly with a set of key applications, SQL, BizTalk, Windows. We also see a set of Linux in here. Now, Linux is interesting in the sense that instead of trying to build our own Linux like some other companies, we partner with some of the key leaders in the industry so that we actually have Linux Ubuntu coming from Canonical, SUSE delivering a set of SUSE images, and OpenLogic providing CentOS. So we're actually working with those vendors that really know the Linux community to provide the right experience and images in this platform gallery. In addition to that, you have images that you can upload. We don't have any in here yet. And also disks, which in Windows Azure is something that's already been configured. So it's a OS that's running. So you can think of your disaster recovery case with a disk. You may actually have it running in Hyper-V. You just upload it to Windows Azure, turn it on, and the same machine is running there in Azure. Very easy disaster recovery and a way to move machines.
Okay. So do you want to just maybe walk through building one of the VMs up?
Absolutely. So let's take the server, Windows Server 2012. We go in here. Now, in Windows Server 2012, we have a couple different images that we have here. One was published in November, one was published in January. We tend to update the images on a monthly basis. So when you deploy your machine, as soon as you start it up, all of your patches are applied there, and so it's just ready to go. But of course, we keep an older one, so if you've actually tested and validated against a specific version, that'll be available as well. So here we're setting the host name of the machine,
okay,
along as well as the password on the machine. We'll comment here, just as a tip, make sure to set a good password because you do connect to these machines over RDP through the internet, and so you want to make sure you have a strong password as you deploy your virtual machine. Additionally, you select your size. So depending on what workload you're doing, like if you're doing SQL, you may use a larger virtual machine. If you're doing a simple dev test environment, you do something a little bit large. Simple dev test, you may actually use a small virtual machine. And this impacts your pricing. You pay more for the larger virtual machines than you do on the small. Now when you come into it, you actually have the ability to set up either a standalone virtual machine or you can connect to existing virtual machines. Now just to show you, we've actually not completed deployment. So you have the ability to connect to an existing virtual machine or a standalone virtual machine. So if you're doing an environment where you have multiple machines in like a server client scenario, you'd actually connect to existing virtual machines. Since this is our first one, we'll just say a standalone. Now here, this is the name that's going to be exposed on the internet to connect to it. So again, this needs to be unique for Windows Azure.
Effectively, that's your cloud service name, right? And then you can assign multiple virtual machines to that same cloud service,
yep.
Right?
Okay. We'll specify a storage account, or we can let the portal create one for us. And here you have then this notion of either locations or virtual networks. And so what this allows you to do is locations are just the Windows Azure locations that are supporting virtual machines. So we have 6 locations around the world that support virtual machines. You also have this notion of a virtual network, which we can touch on in a moment. The virtual network allows you to bring your own DNS server, so if you're setting up a domain controller or something that's useful. The virtual network is also the thing that allows you to connect back to an on-premise environment through what we call the VPN, site-to-site VPN technology.
And so if you choose, let's say, not a virtual network or just an affinity group or a region, at that point you're going to be using, what, Windows Azure DNS for that example?
Exactly, okay. Exactly. So we'll provide a DNS server for your machines if you don't select a virtual network.
Okay.
So for this, let's just go ahead and select West US. Now you also have this ability to set what's called an availability set. Now an availability set is what you use to tell Windows Azure that a set of machines are providing similar functionality. And so with this, you'd actually specify, for example, if you're doing a web front end on your SharePoint site, you'd set all of the front ends into an availability set. That way, Windows Azure knows to not take those down at the same time. So if it needs to do any kind of maintenance, it'll update the machines one at a time. This maintenance on the underlying hypervisor, and instead of taking those machines down at the same time and leading to loss of availability.
And how does that relate to the SLAs that we provide?
So the way that we do the SLAs, and again, the virtual machines is just in preview right now, yeah. So we don't have SLAs. The expectation is that with virtual machines, the SLA will match what we do for our existing platform as a service workloads. Those are, if you have two instances, we will guarantee that at least one of those instances are up 99.95% of the time. So you really have very high availability. In addition, the data that your virtual machine, instead of being just local, as in our existing offerings, the data on a infrastructure service virtual machine is persistent to Windows Azure Storage, so that data is stored in triplicate in the data center. So you have very high reliability also on the data.
Yeah, and then right with the storage account, you can of course choose that option for storage geo redundancy. So if you wanted that additional deal, you could do that.
If you do that additional, then you get another three copies, giving you six total copies of your data in two separate regions.
Okay, cool.
So we'll let this provision out. So when this completes, we would have our virtual machine that would just connect into it via RDP. Mm-hmm. Additionally, so those are the platform images we would walk through. I'd also like to point out something that we've integrated in around images with Linux. So Linux, there's a huge amount of open source options out there, different types of applications, different types of stacks. And we've integrated with a site called VM Depot. VM Depot is done by Microsoft OpenTech, where we actually are partnering with folks in the open source community to deliver these stacks of Linux images. As you look here, these are our core Linux offerings that we have validated on the Azure stack, CentOS, OpenSUSE, SLES, and Ubuntu. For each of these, you can select in here and see a large number of stacks of pre-configured applications. And so you could select your application stack. Let's say you're using Ruby. Select this, and what this is going to do is it's going to copy it into your storage account. So we'll set a storage account name here. And this is now downloading from the VM Depot site into your storage account. And when that's completed, you'd be able to then deploy a VM using this image that's been downloaded. This you could also achieve by going to the VM Depot site. And this provides a little bit more information. You can do some searching. It's the same images. And if you are uploading, if you're building your own images, you can upload images of those supported Linux versions, supported Linux distributions, into this site. And then others could use your image on Windows Azure.
OK, very cool. Yeah. All right, so now that you've kind of shown provisioning of a couple VMs, can you show us what it looks like to connect up?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So connecting to a virtual machine is quite simple. As you select the virtual machine in here, you're going to get an option to connect. So when you click on connect, we're going to give you the RDP connection file, and you could just open this, and it's going to start your connection. You enter your password, and you're off and away. And we'll flip over, and at the end, you end up with a connection to the virtual machine through RDP. You can manage the machine, do whatever you need to do through RDP. Now, it's worth noting, though, we are connecting again over the internet. The way that this is done is we have a set of endpoints. So here we've opened up one endpoint, 3389. This is the default RDP port. Today, with this configuration, only machines can get, or connections only come into 3389. Any other ports are going to be blocked from coming into that machine. So you do have some security. It's only that one endpoint that's being opened up for your virtual machine. You could also come in here once you've done your configuration. You could delete this, and that then gives you a little bit more security on your virtual machine. You just need to come back in here and recreate the endpoint, 3389, to connect to it again.
Right, and if you had multiple VMs on that same cloud service, right, which has a single public IP, how does that work as far as connecting back?
Exactly. So if you notice here, you have both your public port and the private port. So for RDP, you have the private port is always 3389, but you can have any public port you'd want. So if you added another virtual machine into the same cloud service, what you'd see is a public port that would be some other number. It would be a randomized number at the higher end of the range that you would connect through. Now, when you do the RDP connection, that is embedded into the RDP file. And so as a user, you really don't need to worry about that. You just get connected directly to the correct machine.
Okay. So, all right, so now that we've created VMs, I know that for folks that have those trial accounts set up, there's obviously, we allow one small core for the course of about a month. What are some tips maybe that we can give people to minimize so they don't hit their limit really quickly?
It's a great point. It's a great point. So with trial accounts, or even if you're paying for it, you don't want to pay for more than you need.
Right.
So the key thing to remember with Windows Azure is when the machine is deployed, you're getting billed for both the machine and the storage. So what you can do, we won't delete this machine, we'll come in. If a machine is not needed, you can just select that. And what you do need to do is delete the machine. If you just stop the machine, it stays. Actually, let me just show you real quick before I do this.
Before you delete it,
If we just try to stop the machine, the shutdown, we do tell you that the virtual machine is deployed, and even if it's shut down, you're going to be charges will continue to be incurred. So if you are done with the virtual machine, or even if you're done just for the day, you do want to go and do a full stop of or full delete of the virtual machine. So we don't want to just shut it down, but we actually want to delete it. Now, once you delete the virtual machine, you'll no longer be paying for the virtual machine. If you want to be able to easily deploy that again, though, you can come back to the disk, the operating system disk, or if you have data disks as well, and just create a new virtual machine using that data disk as your OS, and you can be up and running very quickly again. And so that allows you to just, again, pay for the time that you need, but be able to resume easily.
So if you, so it saves the disk in this current state wherever it's at. Now, if we just delete it without shutting it down, is that the same thing as a shutting it off while it's powered on, or does Windows Azure know when it's deleting it to power it down and then save it?
Yeah, Windows Azure knows to shut it down in a graceful manner so that the disks and all the applications get a graceful shutdown. Then the disk is persisted. So once it's shut down, if you actually are done with it completely, then you can come in to the disks section here and by selecting the disk section here, you will see a list of all of your disks that you've used and have not deleted. So in this configuration, I've had a lot of machines. You could select one and just redeploy that, or if you're truly done with it, you can select the disk. Now when you click delete, you will see you will have the option to delete it from just as being used as an OS disk or a data disk for IaaS, or you can delete it completely from your storage. And so the bottom option of retain the associated VHD, that maintains the actual blob in Windows Azure Storage. The delete associated VHD eliminates from storage, it's gone, and you won't pay for it, but then again, it is gone. And so if we were completely done with that, don't need it anymore, our tests are done, we do the delete the associated VHD, it gives us a warning of exactly what's going to happen, and we click this, and it will delete.
Okay, and at that point now, you're not being charged also for the storage on that as well.
Exactly. At this point, you're not charged for storage or the compute cost. It's gone.
Okay, and I know one of the thing that was interesting to me, and maybe you could bring this up for folks in the audience, is the disk storage space. I know the trials, you get 35 gigabytes of storage space. A lot of these gallery images, right? I mean, they're 30, 40 gigs, but you know, only takes up about 8 gigs of space on the drive. So how does Windows Azure calculate that?
Exactly. So when you deploy your first virtual machine, the disk size will say it's a 30 gig disk. However, it's only using maybe 15, 20 gigs of actual data. Windows Azure only charges the customer for the actual data used on the disk. And then as you add to that, then you'll pay for additional, if you install another application, you pay for that additional space. Now, one caveat and one thing to note today is that as you add to it, if you then delete the files, you're still paying for the maximum size. The way that the Windows Azure Storage is structured is it sees that the OS has written to it, and so now it considers that part of the disk and valid data, so that you'll charge for that once you've written to it.
Okay. And so if you upload your own, let's say, dynamically expanding 120 gigabyte VHD file, what goes on there?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you upload your own, you want to use a tool that's called CS Upload. What that does is if you actually take a dynamic disk, it will upload that to Windows Azure and convert it on the fly to a fixed disk. Now, as it does the conversion, it's looking through and it's finding which parts of the disk are not being used, which part of the disk is zeros, and it does that same mechanism in Windows Azure Storage. It says this is not something you need to store on disk. Don't charge the customer for it. And so, effectively, you're only paying for the dynamic portion of that VHD, even though it does show as a full fixed 127 gig disk in your storage account.
Okay, and I know that we have a new PowerShell command that will instead of CS upload, that we'll use that is an alternate, I guess, to
the CS upload
command.
Yes.
And maybe that's something we'll cover with somebody else in another episode. But,
yeah, the PowerShell, there's a great amount of things you can do with PowerShell. Yeah. We're continuing to expand. And one of the things you'll see with this is Windows Azure Infrastructure Services is the best place to run Windows virtual machines in the cloud. PowerShell is a key part of that with an IT organization. And so this is an area where we continue to expand, as you see with the CS upload, moving that into PowerShell. We'll see more and more as we go forward on that.
Well, yeah, and Gallery is great for kind of a quick fix. But, you know, obviously, if you want to spin up 10, 20, whatever VMs, PowerShell, you could have a full, you know, environment spun up pretty quickly. So very cool. But thank you very much, Drew, for your time.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've learned a little bit about Windows Azure and virtual machines. Stay tuned for more Edge episodes from myself on Windows Azure and the public cloud. But if you have other episodes that you would like to see, email us edge@microsoft.com or
tweet at TNEdge.
Cool. Until next time.